Welcome to Lead Follow, a podcast for pastors and leaders, hosted by MCUSA Executive Director Glenn Guyton. Join Glenn as he talks to folks across the denomination to help equip today's leaders who are leading while following Jesus.
I'm Glenn Guyton, and during this season of Lead Follow, we'll be exploring ways to engage with youth and young adults from Gen Alpha to Gen Z. Today, I am pleased to welcome Lynette McIntosh Madrigal, who will be discussing ministering to Gen Z. Now, Lynette has a heart to work with youth and young people in the community. She channels this faith into empowering young minds and nurturing stronger communities. Lynette is a passionate advocate for holistic growth, believing in the transformative power of investing in individuals and neighborhoods for a brighter, more equitable, and resilient future. Lynette holds a Master's of Arts in Community Leadership and Transformation from Fresno Pacific Biblical Seminary and loves discovering new food spots with her husband. Lynette is a new member of the Women in Leadership Steering Committee, and she has roots in California's Central Valley and a cherished Mexican heritage from Michoacan, Mexico. Lynette, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm so happy to be here and talk about Gen Z. I'm excited.
All right. And I'm excited about learning maybe a little bit more about the food. I know that's not in the why we actually here, but hey, I love food. I'm always interested in different food from around the country, around the world. So maybe we'll talk about that just a little bit.
Let's do it.
All right. But my first question is for you. If you could give your 13-year-old self one piece of advice, what would that be?
Man, if I could give my 13-year-old self a piece of advice. So I was thinking about this question as you gave it to me a couple months ago, and it reminded me of the sole reason why I just launched into youth ministry in the first place. I had this like radical experience with Jesus at the age of like 19, 20. And all I wanted to do is meet middle schoolers throughout that age from 12 to 14. I was like, if I could just meet middle schoolers during this age and have them have an encounter with the love of their life, which is Jesus, I wonder what ways they would make different choices. And my one thing is like, man, if somebody would have just told me about the good news, like if somebody just shared about Jesus at 13, I feel like I would have saved myself a lot of heartbreak. I regret dating so young. Okay. And I dated very young, and I made a lot of terrible mistakes that I regret. And so that's why I'm like, I want to meet young people and let them know, like, you are loved. You're searching for love. Let me help you find that love, though, in very healthy ways. And so that's my one piece of advice is don't date.
Don't date too early. Yeah. I was a youth pastor for a while, and that's one of the things that we talked about was dating, right? And this kind of serial dating that people do. And, you know, I've always asked, hey, does that really prepare you for marriage? Does it prepare you for healthy relationships in the future? And I really don't think it does. It just maybe teaches you a whole bunch of bad habits. I don't know. What do you think about that?
I agree. I think, like, your frontal lobe isn't fully developed, and you're making these choices, and you're wanting to have these very deep conversations with this person you're with. And some people make some really big life decisions at such a young age, right? When you think about it, you're like, whoa, like, you can't even get a like driver's license. You can't get most things. And people are making these big life decisions. But I also see the ways in youth ministry, maybe you've seen this too, the ways that when they come in dating together in your youth ministry, they break up, you never see them again, right? Because they don't want to see each other. And that's like a painful part too. And so I always have to remind young people that are dating in that space. I'm like, yo, I'm glad this is your space and you brought your girlfriend. Or like, hey, I'm glad you brought your boyfriend, but know that this space is for both of you, right? Like kind of like prefacing like, hey, if something does happen, like that's fine. Like we move on and we work through things, but you belong in this space. But yeah, I see the ways that people experience shame. We confront shame, right? We confront shame and we want to, but people don't know how to wrestle with that. And so they leave and they take their partner with them. And so that's the hard part too, right? And so.
Yeah. So now you said that you had an encounter. Did you say when you were about 19? Is that when it was? Yeah. And so were you raised in church, or how did you come about having this encounter? Were you just visiting churches, or yeah, what happened in your personal journey?
Yeah, my testimony is interesting. So I grew up Catholic. So okay. I grew up in this small little migrant community in Orosi, the Central Valley. And really, we lived right in front of the Catholic Church, the parish in our community. And so I went to that church every Sunday, did my bautizo, my baptism, my first communion. And some part of me always felt near to God, but on the same time, very distant. And so after I graduated from high school, I went on to Fresno State. And by my sophomore year, I found myself in a space having made some poor choices in life and experiencing a lot of deep shame. When I share my story, I kind of use like a backpack as a analogy or a metaphor, kind of describing like I was carrying this backpack that was heavy, and it had a lot of rocks, a lot of like bad life choices I had put in it. And I just felt depressed. I felt compressed. You know, I felt all these emotions. It was really simple. A New Year's came about, and you would be surprised. Like, I've asked my young people, like, what's your New Year's resolution? And a lot of them, I wonder how common this is, but a lot of people do say they just want to be good people.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And that was my New Year's resolution, and I took it so seriously. I was like, I just want to be a good person. What do good people do? They go to church. Good people, in my head, right? Good people go to church. And I was like, I know the church. I grew up Catholic. Like, let me go to church. Let me go to confessionals. Let's do all the activities. I went to a Bible bookstore and like got the, you know, wanted to find a Catholic Bible and got the candles and
the
book, started reading on monastic wisdom, right? Like I was all in.
Yeah.
And I found myself farther from God, which is really interesting, right? So when you want to seek God, you find God, but I found myself farther from God. And there's a couple reasons for that. One of them is I never was really looking for Jesus, right? I was looking for religion to like fill my life. I was like looking for specific practices I was familiar with. But long story short, I was on campus at Fresno State at the time, a sophomore, and the Lord really introduced me to some incredible people. And I think kind of building blocks, right? Like some people have the one does it, right? Like they just came to God in that moment. I think mine was many different people had to come in my life during a short period of time that helped me see, okay, maybe there's something to this. But the story that I like sharing is I ended up going inside this Christian club on campus called Crew, like Crusader. Fresno State has a chapter. And I remember somebody had shared that there was like a Christian club that met on campus. And I was like, you know what? Like, they must talk about Jesus. They must like know God. Like, let's go check it out.
Right.
So I remember stumbling into this space as somebody who's never been part of any Christian like circle.
Yeah.
The space, and it was so crazy because they were like lifted hands singing Cornerstone, God Alone. And I just remember being like, what is this? Like karaoke? Like, what are we doing? It was just, it was interesting. And I ended up staying. There was something about that. I was like, hey, you know what? Like, I kind of like this. I sat down in the back and I don't know who this person is. I share his story all the time. He was a guest speaker from I don't know where, but had come in and he was like, you know what? Very briefly, I'm not going to spend too much time with you guys, but I just want to share this one book that I've been reading. And he shared Timothy Keller's The Prodigal God.
Okay.
And it's about the account in Luke 15, right? There's a different stories. And then it's the parable of two lost sons. Right? For the two lost sons. And found as he's sharing this story, he goes into this great detail, like describing it to us. And in that moment, Glenn, it was incredible. Because I was like, I felt, again, I'm carrying these rocks. I'm carrying this deep shame. Right. And I'm trying to come back to God. And I feel even more shame. Like I could share of many experiences I had with priests in the confessional booth that really told me, like, why are you here? Right? I treated my confessional booths like my therapy sessions as well. So, but I experienced deep shame. And at that moment, I was like, I don't know if the church wants me. I don't know what to do. And I and that last part, right, in that story where the father reinstates the younger son into the house. He's like, you know what? I'm so happy you're back. He runs to him, right? And we all know those like symbolic meanings. And I was just like, you mean God is running to me as Ooh. I'm running to him? Like, he's like, and so even I get emotional thinking about it. And I realized I made a commitment in that moment. I was like, I don't know who this God is, but this is who I want to follow. And so in that moment, I gave my life to Jesus, and it really felt like this veil that was like covering my face, like was lifted, and I could understand the word. And so it was just like a radical experience in that moment. But man, that kind of fueled a fire in me to share that good news with multiple young people, especially middle schoolers. And so I spent most of my time with middle schoolers.
Man, that's a great story. It's so much there that, that's probably I could go and ask you more questions about. And we have a topic we're supposed to be talking about, but that was really good. I mean, I think that's something powerful young people could learn, especially the part about shame. I don't know if we do a good job in the church of helping people work through that. I think sometimes in the church, we put shame on people, and we don't really talk about how we get delivered from that. So that's a story for another day, maybe that we can unpack a little bit. But yeah, man, that's great. I appreciate your story. And so you said you were working with middle schoolers. And so now I don't know how old you are, because everybody, the older I get, the younger everyone looks. But I'm assuming you're probably a millennial. Are you a millennial?
I would say I'm a cusper. So I was born in 95. I'm 28 now. So I'm
really
young millennial.
So you're right. Yeah, you're right on the edge. Like 97 is the cutoff kind of. So my daughter is 97. So so now you want to reach out to Gen Z, and you know there are some unique things that we think about Gen Z. So what are the traits or the key things that you're focused on, or that you think people need help with in this generation when it comes to spiritual beliefs or even expectations about church and all these other things?
Absolutely, yeah, Gen Z. One thing that's really interesting with research done on the generations, and even really good research websites like Pew Research Center and other ones, they've come to this understanding that we can't. And the reason I want to bring this up is like people will go and do research on like the generations, and then they'll realize like all the websites have something different to say about the year of that generation. So there's not this like universally agreed or precise, hard cut off. Maybe for like the baby boomers, because that was way back when. Yeah, just kidding. There's still some here today, but unless you're a boomer, but no,
I'm Gen X.
So with Gen Z and perhaps Gen Alpha, we'll see here in the next coming years there'll be like these 5-year gaps of like grayness, right? Where you're like, could they be Gen Z? Could they be millennial? Yeah. The way I like to describe it for people like me who are born around 95 and 97 is I ask questions about technology, right? I grew up, my parents are both, they both migrated from Michoacan, right? And so that only gave us so much access and resources and technology. And so I didn't really grow up with a computer. I just remember we had that one family in our system that had the computer, and that we would go to them. Even I remember on Facebook, we would have to borrow each other's cameras and take a quick, like, nice photo, and then, like, upload it, delete it, and return the camera.
Right. Remember,
that was the way. And so Gen Z's characteristics is they're immersed. Like, they are experts in technology, whereas millennials and Gen Xers have learned to be able to handle and live with technology. Millennials more so, but Gen Z is a whole nother level. Like, so that's with questions with people you'll meet, or the people listening, that if they meet somebody who's born during that time, like ask them questions about technology. Like, did you grow up with technology? If not, I would say you're much more a millennial learning it with us than a Gen Z. But characteristics, we could go way into it. where should I start?
What do you think is the, what do we need to pay attention to, do you think, with these, the specific traits? So you mentioned technology, but what other key things do you think that the church needs to think about as it really seeks to engage Gen Z?
Man. Characteristics? I would say for the church. So I'll talk about some of the shaping influences. Gen Z has, so as we think about wanting to work with this generation, we can look at all of who they are today, right? We see research comes out that Gen Z today is so biblically illiterate, right? So what does that mean? They don't understand Bible stories. Like the typical non-church goer in like the 1920s or 1940s, right? Like that was kind of, of course, you know, like we're all singing these songs about Moses and the Red Sea and all, you know, but Gen Z today isn't aware. They're not, you'd be surprised at just like basic stories about the Bible. There, we did for Advent, we had trivia.
Yeah.
We did not know the nativity scene. They did not know about, you know, Jesus' birth story, and you realize, like, wow, even just like core things that were common sense for many, right? Our young people aren't aware of today. And so, I think one of the specific characteristics, they're biblically literate, they're very anxious and cautious, and we can talk about that. They're realistic and pragmatic. But one of them I love talking about when I do these workshops is talking about the reality that we're living in a era or world that is postmodern, which is a shaping influence for us, right? We think about people growing up before the 1950s who are growing up in a modern era.
Right.
The way that they carried themselves, what they read, the art that was displayed, the way they expressed themselves had rules. There was rules, there was ways of doing things, there were norms. But the reality is Gen Z is growing up in a space that is postmodern. I think most people should spend more time understanding what that is, what that looks like, and how it's actually affecting young people. Because what I see time and time again is in churches, right? When I go and share with churches, is they have the finger and they're like, this Gen Z generation is doing A, B, and C. They're just, you know, living in the gray, crossing the lines, a lot of conversations around gender.
Right.
A lot of judgment is what I hear. But I think what I don't hear is the work that they blame Gen Z for growing up in a vase. But I don't think people spend enough time learning about the vase they're growing up in. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I think, yeah, context is really important. I think, and so I'm Gen X, and I think one of the benefits that we should have as Gen Xers, but maybe I've studied this more than other people, is that we're the transition generation, right? We're the smallest generation right when technology first came about, right? So we saw the birth of it. We had to adopt it and use it, but we did that, you know, in college and a little bit later on. And so we saw kind of the emergence of all of this. And so, you know, Gen Zs are our children, right? Those are my kids, are Gen Z. And so a couple of things that you said, I think that we've dismantled some of these institutions to the detriment of young people, right? Bible literacy. Well, I went to Sunday school. I went to camp. Gen Z is going to, I don't know, travel baseball, travel soccer. They have so many things.
So many young people are like hitting the raves. They're hitting. I'm like, wait, what? Like, you're doing, how old are you? Like, I've never been to a rave, yo.
Yeah. It's so this technology thing. So you talked about technology, and this, and maybe I'm going to push back a little bit with you on this. You said that Gen Z are experts in technology, but I would look at it a little bit differently because who created the technology? Well, you know, baby boomers, Gen X. We actually created the behind the scenes, but they are expert consumers of the technology, right? Like, I think that's the key. Like, they are, I don't even, maybe we want to say that they're victims of this consumer technology, information and all of the inputs that they're getting. I just don't know how I don't know how you keep up. I mean, maybe you have some advice about that, because I feel like as a Gen Xer, I had to go seek out information, right? I had to be intentional about what I wanted to find and how I found it. But now information is just being just thrown at young people.
And that's scary. That sounds scary, right? Yeah. And in many ways, right? And we could talk about what are some implications, what should adults do in the life of young people? What are best practices when working with young people as a youth minister? How do we advise them? One of them, I would say, is opening the door towards safe conversations and not shaming them, right? Having very young people, we'd be surprised how much, especially, so I work with inner city youth who don't know Jesus, right? Like I don't spend a lot of time with Christian young people, but a lot of my work is with young people who I would hope would make an informed decision to follow Jesus, but you know, like in their time. But in that, you'd be surprised how many of them like are okay with if you just ask them like, yo, like, what do you do with your phone? Like, what do you, like, I had one of them and I did give him a gift card. Is I asked them, I was like, okay, I have a $20 Starbucks card. We're going to do an activity. And I was doing this activity at a continuation school with some kids and all high schoolers, like junior, senior. I was like, okay, I need you to show me your each iPhone. Where's my iPhone at? Each iPhone has a, what do they call that? Let me check. They like the stats on how often you use your phone.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I forget what word there is for it. But anyway, they know, oh, the screen time. Your screen time. How much time do you spend on your phone? Could you believe some people spend over 16 hours? At least my teens did.
What?
Between 16, some person was at 19. I was like, how are you, like, in a week? Like, that's their, no, not a week, like daily, that's their weekly average. Daily,
yeah.
Daily average. I was shocked. And then we went on talking about technology and why we do that, right? And so I think the why is also important. We can blame young people and be like, man, like, I could have shamed them in that moment, been like, no way, you, like, you're so bad for that, you know? Instead of, I could have asked curious questions. What do you do? You know, like 19 hours, like, what do you know? I watch TV on my phone. That makes sense. I guess a lot of us, right? And so not, especially my young people who are growing up in poverty, right? None of them all have TVs in each room. And so they use their cell phone for a lot of things. A lot of them use their cell phone as a computer, right? And so if they're in school, maybe they don't have a laptop. Maybe their school isn't there yet to give them one or all these other pieces. So I think asking curious questions, avoiding the shame piece, because once we avoid or hold judgment, because we have judgment, we all have judgment. But if we were able to hold judgment enough to ask curious questions, we'd realize, okay, what is my young person experience in this moment? And what do they need from me? Do they need me to give them some wisdom and advice? Or could I teach them in healthy ways? Like, how do you, hey, we don't need to use your phone. One practice that I have with young people is when I bring them to youth ministry, to church on Wednesday nights, my agreement is, and I have to be hard in this way. I don't often am, but, and for my youth ministers listening out there, like, it's okay to be rough, especially if you're working with inner city youth, like, in many ways, they need that. They need some type of authority in their life that loves them and is able to give them their authority. But I have young people I pick them up and I'm like, listen, like, I'm spending my time having adult, like, conversations with them. Like, hey, I picked you up. I'm spending my time. I love that you come. I love that you text me and you're like, Lynette, are you picking me up to go today? I was like, absolutely. Also, I've noticed, like, you're on your phone a lot. Like, that's disrespectful. Like, I'll give you your phone. You could do whatever you want. Like, we're like hanging out, we're just visiting, we're playing basketball. But once Pastor Brad is the pastor that shares the message, or whoever's sharing the message that Wednesday, 10 minutes. Like, all he talks is, he never will talk more than 10 minutes. We also have a rule, like, one characteristic for the people listening is don't talk that much with young people, right? Because they'll have such a short attention span.
Right.
And my young people's like, they're never going to talk more than 10 minutes. And so give them that, you know, like listen, but also, and so I'll give them some, I'll let them be able, you know, respond. And if I still see them with their phone, I'm just like, hey, you're giving me your phone.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay. And there's not a fight, you know, but because I've built the trust, I've created some authority. And then from then on, I allow them to respond. And once they, you know, and then probably I'm like, they're obviously going to do it, but I've given them the opportunity to respond well. And if they didn't do it, I'm like, hey, listen, like I, last week you used your phone. I saw you, you took a call. Like how many of my kids will literally take calls in the middle of youth ministry? Oh boy.
Yeah.
And so FaceTimes, I've seen FaceTimes. I've seen everything. So at some point, I'm like, listen, like I saw you do that 10 minutes. I'll give it to you after we're done. But, and so they'll give it to me. And so I have this big old bag and I just put people's phones in there. and I give it to them after. And I'm like, see those? Yeah. So creating healthy habits when their phone's away in non-consequential ways, right? Yeah. I'm not punishing you. I'm not, right? And so there's, I guess we could play with some applied behavioral analysis here, you know, and it, this is a, there's ways to do like a, what is that? That's a negative consequence because I'm taking it away or give, you know, there you could play with reinforcements and consequences.
Yeah, but, positive reinforcement. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think it's good. I think you have some key points. So I want to make sure people are paying attention to this and that they have the right context. So, you know, part of it is giving young people opportunity to respond well. I think that's excellent. Many times we already think we know what they're going to say, or we approach young people in this accusatory way. But you talk about building trust. You know, I think that's key. Once young people know that you, who you are, right? So you're consistent in your leadership approach. They trust you. They know what you stand for. They know that you're going to be non-judgmental if they're talking about, if you're talking to them about different things. I think that really just helps young people respond well, where they just open up to you. And I think sometimes they forget, like, oh, wait a minute, I shouldn't be telling this adult this. But if you develop that relationship, I think as a youth pastor, as an adult leader in their lives, I think it just opens up a world of information and sharing. So I think that's one of the things that I want people to get from what you said, because we want to know how to communicate with these young people. And I think some mistakes that older people make is they try to act like they're a kid when they're talking to people. No, you're not in that generation. That's not what they need from you. They don't need you to be.
Absolutely.
They need you to be a responsible adult.
Yes.
The other part you said, hey, you can be rough with these kids. So I understand exactly what you're saying, because, you know, I led a group of Black kids and it's different, right? But part is trust. You can be straight with kids. You can hold kids accountable if they know that you're authentic. If you practicing what you preach, and I don't know if everybody's gonna get that, because it's kind of an art. It's a cultural thing too. But I always talk to my kids direct. Like I don't have time to. I'm not here to baby you. You know, I'm gonna tell you what you need to hear, and they know that it comes from love. They know that. That if you're authentic, I think kids can treat you after, all
right? You're not going to treat them some type of way after, right? Like you're going to, or you're after that, you're going to be like, by the way, how are you? Right? After you just told them all that, like, well, you need to grow up. Also, you're a mom. Like, I remember you said you were moving, you know, or, you know, and so creating spaces where it's like, I care about you. Also, I'm going to call you out.
Yeah.
Don't diss me, you know? And so I think a part of it is, reminding young people, like, dude, you can't treat people like that.
And I think it's a loving kind of chastisement, if you want to call it that. I mean, you can't like embarrass them in public, and they need to know that you aren't, again, like trying to shame them. But I've been tough with kids, and some of my kids are like approaching their 40s now, right? But I was tough on them, and they tell stories that are like funny now about, remember when you did this? I called my mama, and my mama was saying, Minister Glenn. Me and Glenn made me do such and such, and he did this to me. And the mom was like, well, you must have did something, so you do what he says. But it's because you built up trust. So, Yeah, it's interesting. And one more thing, you talked about technology, and I like that practice. When I was starting in youth ministry, phones and stuff were just coming about, and I just saw the disruption. And yeah, so I like how you handle that. Again, I took phones, but this was before phones were just like crucial to everything. But I saw how disruptive they could be, because now instead of paying attention to you, they were texting friends back home or calling friends and all these other things, and bringing drama from, you know, 1,000 miles away to our trip and our retreat that we were trying to have.
Man, let's talk about that, huh? No, the drama's, oh man, there's always some drama. Like, there's always somebody I need to call them up. They're like gonna, you know, I'm like, no one's gonna, like, where are you, how are you gonna get there? Like, or like when people get invited at youth group and they call their gang and they come, I'm like, whoa, like technology has just got you like that. But one thing I do want to touch on with the phones is, because we talk a lot about shame, which is really, I love that we're talking about this, is we shame young people for their use of technology.
Yeah.
When they're still developing. Middle school, their brain is still, they're learning how I don't even think they're aware of how their body is being wired, but it's kind of like, I don't want to say like drugs, but I'm going to use that extreme example.
It is, yeah.
It's kind of like a drug, right? Like, we have things like phantom syndrome. I forget what it's called, but when you feel like your phone vibrates and you kind of...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was nothing. And you're like, no, I felt, is it your phone? Like, check. Somebody's need to check.
Right.
And so there's many ways that young people, we take their phone away and they kind of throw a fit. No, you're not going to take my phone away. And then we're like, they're so crazy. But it's like, well, part of it is they're used to right? There's like research not coming out, like the dopamine they get from a dopamine that we get from a notification. Like we feel we feel excited. Yeah. Like what notification is it? Apple News, really? Like, come on, somebody needs to text me. But we get these notifications and they do something to our bodies, right? That are really, and so young people are continuously flooded with these notifications. There's applications that are so good at like working through those notifications. There's this really cool documentary on Netflix that shares a lot about like the dark side of the notifications and what that does.
I think it's the social media. Is that the social network?
Social network. Yeah. Have you seen it?
Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy.
And so it teaches a lot about, okay, I'm mad at a young person who in my one-on-ones, right? As I work with youth ministry, there's concerns. I need to meet with you one-on-one. And as I'm with them, what they want to do is they're distracted. Like they can't help it. They have a good conversation with me. And then they're like, hold on. And they're talking to me as they're like texting. And I could have been like, dude, you're so rude. Like, how dare you like that? You know what? Like, I wanted to talk about this with you, but let me talk about this. And I could be like, okay, Lynette, they're 14. They don't have probably the understanding that they are probably, you know, they're this unhealthy addiction with their phone. Mm-hmm. How do I do with that? And so one thing I do is I just walk with them. So I would say, like, if you're with a young person and they struggle with pieces like that and you're wanting to have, like, a deep conversation or address a concern, go on a walk. Yeah. It's actually hard to, like, hold a coffee and text on your phone and try to have a conversation with me at the same time, right? And you've got to drop one of them. But creating those healthy those spaces to be able to have healthy disconnections. And I do advise that when I have these workshops with parents is, like, I do advise, like, create spaces where you set limits. Like, limits are fine. Like, we need limits. I need limits. Like, I need to find moments. You know, everyone does their like social media detox. I'm going to like leave. But everyone does it. I'm glad people do. We need those. We need those spaces to be able to separate from social media and our phones at times.
So the interesting thing about me, to me, is that you're really talking about a lot of, I would say, old school youth ministry techniques that I think that people have forgotten. And I mean, I really appreciate that. I think so. If you are a youth leader now listening to this, you know, back in when I was doing this, it was a youth minister named Doug Fields. I think he wrote the book Purpose Driven Youth Ministry. And one of the things that he talked about in that book was that youth ministries, like building dog houses. Like he would invite some kid over to his house and they would help build a dog house. But the powerful ministry happened because the kid was, you know, focused on his task. They were working together, talking to one another. And that sounds a lot like what you're talking about with your walks. And I think that we can get caught up in a lot of programming, and it could be, now it could be my generation. If we're still doing youth ministry, I don't know. It's probably millennials now. I think we can get caught up in trying to make it flashy. We can get caught up in a whole bunch of adding a whole bunch of technology. But from what I hear from you, detaching from the technology that's kind of controlling their lives and just making a space where you can just talk is really crucial to meeting the needs of this next generation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I will say, I don't want to discount all the great hours that youth pastors put in. I don't get paid to do youth ministry. Well, I do, youth, but I'm not a youth pastor in that way. But I would say it works for specific young people. There's specific young people that want the quiet space, and they bring their Bible with them, and they sit down and they're praying, and those are incredible leaders that we need. I would say the majority of young people don't know Jesus, right? And are curious, though. It's not like they're like these like atheists or agnostics, but just haven't had an opportunity to explore these spaces. And so I love that you said that, because it's been in the moments where we're doing things together with young people outside of the church that has allowed for opportunities for me to speak into their lives. And a lot of them is our car rides, right? Like, be willing.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
Take your teens home. Because it's been in my car rides home where I'm able to, you know what? Like, I drop them off in really sketchy places in town. And I'm like, yo, here, how long you lived here? Oh, my whole life. No way. Where's the best taco truck? You know? Or, tell me about your neighborhood. Oh, I hate it here. Like, I want to move out. I'm like, yeah, that sounds hard. Like, let me meet your mom. You know, like, especially when I dropped the teen off last week. And there was these two adults outside. I was like, are those your parents? Oh, yeah, that's my mom and dad. Dude, I want to meet them. All right, you know, like, park my car. Those other teens in the car, too, were like, let's just go home. I'm like, no, I need to know about your system. It allows me to get to know you better and also address concerns or whatever it is, right? Like, young people feel known. If I'm willing to get to know you, like, how exciting is that, right? Like, if I, Glenn, whatever it is you love, like your hobbies, like if we spend enough time talking about that with you, you're like, man, they're right. You know, like if you hold the conversation about my dog with me, I'm like, dude, like I feel so happy. And so it's those pieces, but building, I've never thought about that. Would you call that building dog houses?
Yeah. Building dog houses. Yeah.
Building dog houses. That reminds me of camp.
But it's just, again, like you said, it's just like kind of hanging out. You know, you're dropping them off, you're meeting their family. Like, that's really, man, I mean, yeah, you need to teach them some fundamentals about scripture and things like that. But I think that those experiences and those connections will be long lasting. And it'll make, you know, as you try to teach them the word and teach them about God, it'll make it stick that much more, because they'll notice, hey, this is authentic. This person believes what they're telling me, and I think we'll stick with them.
Absolutely. Yeah. At Youth for Christ, we base our whole ministry on building relationships. Yeah. I'm never going to force you to believe something. I'm never going to, we rarely do the, all right, every eye closed, raise your hand. If we base our whole ministry on authentic Christ sharing relationships, where I will authentically meet with you, and it will take time. Like, we understand that our walks with Jesus take time. You know, the ways that they transform through the years is through time. But eventually, young people, you know, like, make informed decisions about what they want to do with their lives. But it's in that relationship, right? Mm-hmm. Not just the, all right, I'm here this week and I want to share this quick message that touched me dearly. That works. I don't want to discount. That worked for me. At the same time, what kept me around was meeting people in that circle that walk with me to this day, that were able to mentor me. And so I want to touch on this too. I keep saying the word concerns. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I want to talk about this concern or concern. And those are the characteristics we see in Gen Z, right? And so many, I do want to affirm the fact that like these like universal practices, like building relationship is important. As a youth minister, like spend time, especially with young people who tend to be like the harder in your youth ministry, invest in them even more, like see them. Me and my husband love to think about youth ministry as a space where no one is kicked out. And that's that's hard, right? Because there's some teens that you're like, man, you need to leave. Like you're booted like for a month. But what happens when those, and we've seen many teens kicked out of several spaces. With the youth pastor I work with now at this Mennonite church and my husband's old youth ministry, we very much had this philosophy, like, you know what, like hard teens stay.
Yeah.
Hard teens stay. But we also address concerns. And so one of them that I hear a lot from parents is they experience a lot of anxiety.
Oh, like, yes.
Anxiety is huge. Like, and I've asked myself those questions too, right? Is it like, do we have the language now? Like we've all always experienced anxiety. I don't know, Glenn, were you able to say when you were younger that you were anxious, or were you anxious? Did you not have the language for it?
I think it's two things. Part of it is that we didn't have the language for it. So it wasn't anything that you would talk about. You internalized a lot of stuff that was in probably unhealthy ways. And so that was part of it. But the other part of it is we just didn't know as much. I mean, you think like, I wasn't inundated with news 24 hours a day. I didn't know what was going on everywhere, every second. If I was going to get news, by the time I got news growing up as a kid, it was already, you know, days. Oh, now you get news and stuff the minute it happens and you get it from everywhere. So part of it is we just have so much exposure to things without context. And then the other part of it is, yeah, now we can articulate it a little bit more, but I don't think kids understand the coping mechanisms that are available to them.
Absolutely. And there are a lot of things that, you're right, I think news, deep, heavy conversations, we as adults are trying to wrestle with, like, how do I deal with, like, how this is making me feel?
Yeah.
And like trying to find like the proper, like responses. How do I deal with like what's going on in Israel, Palestine at this moment?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, in Gaza. How do I deal with climate change? How do I deal with this?
Social security.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, what we're talking about, interest rates and housing. There's like the millennial problem, right? But young people, right? Like, they have these gifs and jokes and they try to handle it with humor, dark humor, which is really interesting. And so how are young people talking about anxiety? So I find spaces to be able to address that, and talk about that, and find open doors where young people can have these safe conversations. And if they are thinking about, you know, like suicidal ideation, like how do we find healthy ways to be able to help find them help? Because I'm not like a professional to be able to walk them through that. So how do I, what's that next step?
And I think part of it, we have to acknowledge that these things are real. You know, sometimes, you know, again, I'm Gen X and we joke about how tough we were growing up, but you know, we didn't have a war really. Like the Vietnam War had ended. We had relative stability. I mean, we had some high interest rates and some gas crisis, but I mean, young people now have COVID, you know, the economic downturn you have. You know, again, like, Israel, Palestine, Russia, all these things that were kind of relatively peaceful during our time. Young people have been through a lot. And I think we need to acknowledge that and figure out how we help them to work through it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, you've given us so much good stuff, Lynette. I really appreciate it. I look forward to talking to you again, just in person. So it's just so wonderful meeting you and hearing what you're doing with these young people and to know a little bit about your context, again, who you're working with and the things that are impacting these young people's lives. You know, I hope people pay attention to what you had to share, but thank you so much for joining me. Any closing words?
I would just say, I want to just share an image. I would say as young people are different across the U.S. and across the world, and that's a given. But I would say if there's one thing you take from this podcast is to think about young people, our generation, Gen Alpha, Gen Z, as the water, and the world is their vase. And so spend time, like you said, context, right? Spend time understanding what is their context, what is the vase in them, and how is this vase like shaping who they are.
Ooh, okay.
I've spent time doing that specifically in Fresno, California.
Yeah.
Like, was the neighborhood, right? Like, what's the neighborhood? How are their parents shaping who they are? How is post-modernity shaping who my young people are? And because of that, how will they respond to the gospel, right? And so, like, do the good work. You're sharing a good message. But is it getting through to them in a way that, you know, based on their context is okay. able to?
All right. Context is important. So think about that, too, as you watch this. But for the latest news and events from Mennonite Church USA, please subscribe to Piecemeal, our weekly email newsletter at MennoniteUSA.org/piecemeal. And we ask you to prayerfully consider supporting the ongoing work of Mennonite Church USA's ministry at MennoniteUSA.org/give. Thank you so much for joining us today. All right, let me stop sharing.